throw themselves at the men in order for the men to assault them or whatever you call it. But I blame the women for that, because a man's weakness, a lot of women know is a man's weakness. So I always, that's the way I always look at things like that, that the woman, the way she did or say things would cause a man to sometimes to be. And then she'd go against them, maybe, if they got a little bit too rough, I don't know. And some of them, that's what they was after. They went there pushing to get a man. And I saw two women fighting one time over a man. The one woman had got the husband. And I never saw a fight that was any worse, more fierce than what those two women were. There was one man on each side, grabbed each one of the women. They couldn't stop him. So another man helped these other men. They took two men to pull them women apart. They were pulling hair and scratching each other and banging each other. In all my life, I never saw a fight like that. But they was fighting over a man is what they were fighting over. So then someone said, well, we better not stick around here. The head ones will come out here and find out what all this trouble is about. So I hiked away because I didn't want to be brought up if there's anything come out of it, you know, to be up on the witness stand or anything. So I got out of there. And I didn't stay, but there was two men, two heavy-bodied men that had to bite those two women. Oh, boy, they were hellish. Don't think they were. And I wouldn't fight over a man like that. I'd say, well, if you want somebody else, let them have it. That's what I'd tell. That's what I did tell them, too. I said, if you want somebody else, it's not me that wants somebody else, but if you do, I said, I want everything, you can have the other. That was my proposition, and I stuck to it, too. And I think I was wise in saying that. Because so many women take their kids and run home to mama. I wouldn't do that. I don't believe in it. But they did a long time ago, more so than I think they do now. But they used to. The first day, a little trouble come up, oh, they'd pack up the kids and run home to mama. So that's.
During the time that you worked there, was the pace of your work fairly consistent? Were there periods of time when you had to work faster or when you had to slow down?
No, not necessarily. I worked about the same pace with mine. Mm-hmm. Whatever I'd done, I'd work about the same pace. And I don't think very often they'd say, well, we had to get this out or get that out early or something like that. But then the others would put out work in the other tribes. That's the way. So in my case, I think I stayed putting at the same pace all along. I didn't have to work too fast or too slow. That's the way I worked.
Did you ever read the Douglas newspaper? Was there a newspaper
in
Douglas?
I don't remember, because I've read in the paper about Douglas since that, but I don't remember about, well, I imagine they did have a paper, but I don't remember about it. I don't know what was called or anything. I don't know what was in it. I don't recall that at all. It looks like they would have, but I don't know. Because I never had anything to do with the papers, or never had anything in it that I know of. They would have instructions out and things for you, different things like that, but no papers that I knew of.
Were there very many minority workers, men or women?
I don't remember too much about it, but I don't think there were too many colored. I don't think there were. That time it was just mostly colored and white at that time, I think. We didn't have the Mexicans and the Asians and all those. And if I recall, I never worked much with colored much, that I recall, up until VA. VA, they had a lot of them at the time I was working there, and they got more now, they tell me. But if I recall right, I don't think they too often many worked there. Because I think a lot of the colored were in the service, I think most of them, weren't they? Seemed to me like they were. The minority groups.
The services were still segregated in World War II. They had black.
Yeah, they had. Mm-hmm. I think But as far as segregation up there, I don't think they segregated them because if anybody worked, well, they worked with others. But I never had to work with the color that I recall. That's one thing that never bothered me if I had to. Now, at the VA, I worked with them all the time. But I don't recall of ever working much with the colors, and I don't remember seeing too many around. Now, maybe there was segregation somewhere else. I don't know, some other building or something. Now, I couldn't say as to that. If you ever ask anybody else, I don't know.
Do you recall ever hearing of or seeing any kinds of instances around people not wanting to work with blacks or other minorities, or that there was, you know, racial
prejudice? Well, I never noticed it there at the factory. I never noticed it there. It was at the VA, but not at the factory. That is, you could hear some of them say, well, I'm not going to work with that, and I'm not going to do this, and I'm not going to do that. You'd hear people talk like that. But I don't recall of hearing any prejudice up there at the factory, not while the war was on. So, as far as I know, I don't think there was. But if you talk to anybody else, they might be able to tell you more than what I could. Do you talk to many others that's ever worked there?
Yes, I talked about 6-7 women.
Did they say that there was many segregated or many minorities? Have they said the same thing that I have said?
Exactly.
That's what I wondered if they did.
I'm wondering if you had, like this man from Sears gave you a hard time because you were a new person. You were a new person to California. I'm wondering if you ran into any of that at the plant as well. If people looked down on you or said things to you about moving into California, being new in California.
No, the only thing was there were a lot of them were against the Japanese. That was bad. I always felt bad about that because a lot of Japanese people were American people. And I don't know, maybe I'm for the underdog because I didn't believe in mistreating the Japanese. But that was one thing the minister would go against. And that's one thing I resented, listening to anything like that because, and then the Japanese being put in a concentration camp, they all put these Cubans and these people that don't amount to anything in the concentration camps instead of the Japanese. But although the Japanese, they was out to take us. I know that, as far as that's concerned. Because my sister worked with gardeners, and one gardener used to tell my sister, you're bossy now, but we're going to be bossy after a while. And boy, they converting their being bossy, don't think they did in that time of Pearl Harbor. But my sister wrote back and told us that Pearl Harbor was going to be hit. People back there made all fun of my sister for writing back and telling us that. They said, oh, my sister didn't know what she's talking about. It wasn't very long before Pearl Harbor was hit. Don't think it wasn't. Oh, that was terrible. But that was the biggest thing now. And as far as I know, I don't know if any Japanese worked there at the factory, but anyway, they were hated by a lot of them. And even automobiles would try to run them down. I've heard some say, well, I'll run them down if I see them out on the street. Well, if the Japanese were around, they were somewhere else because I don't think they worked at the factory, if I recall. I don't recall any of them. But that was one, that was the main thing. It wasn't against the colored, but it was against the Japanese. That was during the war. And that's the biggest thing that I could say for that.
How did you feel about your working conditions? Were there safety features that...
Well, I didn't have any trouble with the factory only that one time when I think the woman next to me, there was a 10-pound... steel plate, a thick plate, that I think she bumped it and knocked it off and it went on my foot because I wasn't near the plate when she turned around. She says, well, Bowman, she says, you've got to lie down. She says, blood's coming out of your foot. I didn't even know it. The corner went clear through my foot. But it was a 10-pound steel plate, a rock, that we put our material on and then we take our stamps and hammer our number on the floor. And now, what was the question you asked me?
If there were working conditions, if it was hazardous.
No, we was always warned about everything. Now they give us warning on any hazard or anything like that. You was warned plenty, so you'd be your own fault in a way if you got hurt that way. And A lot of people got hurt once in a while, you know, different things, accidentally. But they warned you. Now, as far as that's concerned, if I remember right, they warned us plenty. So.
What happened that time when your foot was bleeding? What did you do?
Well, she was a nurse. You know, she called the superintendent or the head guys over, and they laid me down on the floor till they come with a stretcher, and they took me to a room and let me lay there for about 4 or 5 hours, didn't do much. Finally, they brought me home. They said they don't put a cast on a foot that the wound is open. They didn't even do any medicine. They brought me home, and then I had to go back the next day. So I'm going to have to get how I got there, but anyway, I had to go back with it. I had to have crutches then to go back. So I went back, but when they gave me the crutches, they didn't fit very good, and it was rough, you know, trying to walk with them. So I worked all the time I was on crutches. But the others would bring me the material to me, and it showed up that I put out more work when they brought it to me than it did when I was home. But I didn't stay at home, because as long as I could get around, well, I went to work.
Did you ever go to the dispensary? Did they have a dispensary?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. That was the time they took me. The next day when I went, well, they checked on it, and I don't know whether they put a bandage on it or put a little medicine on it or done something, but they didn't do nothing the first night. They just brought me home. Somebody drove me home. Because I said, gee, I said, I didn't even feel it. It shocked or whatever it was. It hurt so bad that I never felt it. And I didn't even feel it. The blood was just jumping out of my foot. And I got good red blood, but it was jumping out of my foot.
Did you see very many other people injured?
Oh, no, I never saw too many injured. I could see them after they'd been to the dispensary or something like that. But no, they had nurses there, you know, to take care of people. And there was a lot of them would get hurt different ways, just like anywhere else, you know. But like I say, we were warned on any hazard or anything like that, but I didn't have any trouble about anything like that. That was the only time I got hurt there. So I felt like it wasn't my fault, because I think that lady pushed that block over. She may not aim to do it, but I don't think she aimed to. I asked her after, I said, how come you pushed that block? She said, did I? And that was all the answer I got. But she was a nurse, and but we talked quite a good bit. We could talk, that's one thing, we could talk, and had lots to say that way. There was one time, I don't know whether I should tell you or not, but when that guy took 2 cards to cash in, to sign in, you know, for the clock in, when you clock out, uh-huh. The clock in. Well, one of the supervisors had gone uptown. He told one of the other guys to clock him out. Mm-hmm. Well, this guy was ahead of me, and he had 2 cards, and he was ready to push them cards down in the slot, you know. They push the cards down, and then they clock, you know, whatever time he was clocking off. And I yelled at him. I said, what do you think you're doing there with 2 cards? He turned around, and he maneuvered enough to get that 1 card out. So, he had to go, he told me after, he'd come to me the next day, he said, Bowen, I'm going to choke you to death. You yelled at me that day. I said, what did I do? I said, I didn't do anything. He said, when you yelled at me, I turned around, I looked like square at an FBI guy right behind me. I said, well, I tell you, you had no business of signing somebody else out. And I said, I resent that. I said, the other guy's out, no telling what he's doing uptown. Maybe he had business, but then he should have got out himself. So this guy had to call home to his wife and get a hold of the fellow to get back in. He'd sign out late. Well, he signed out late, but he got out anyhow. Well, boy, but that guy, he said, well, I can choke you. I said, well, I didn't.
I was going to ask you about plant security, about FBI in the plant or guards in the plant watching what was going on.
You don't know too many whom there were. If there were too many. I don't think there were enough. That's the main thing, because a lot of things was pulled off. Just like putting those boys to the hardest jobs, and just like him signing out, and like that guy signing for that bond. They don't, a lot of stuff was stolen, too. Some of them would be caught, and some wouldn't. So I just don't think they had as many guards as they ought to have. but maybe I'm wrong, but I don't think they watch up enough. Because there's just too much of that stuff going on with the government stuff. The VA is the same way. But I can't see it. I can't see why that it goes on. Like this one Red, I saw him cash a check in that he had no right to, that the party had signed, had been, I don't know whether it was let out or whether they just signed out and had been out for a couple months. Here he was signing the check, was getting the money for a check. I said, how can you do that, Red? Because I was at the bank, you know, they had a bank place, a place where you could cash your check one piece. And I was right there when he'd done it, and I saw it. He said, well, Bowman, there's one thing about it, you can't say anything, because he said they do it all the way from the top down. And that was the answer he gave me. So that's why I say that I happen to know the person that I can't recall the name right now, but I knew other person at the time that I knew they had checked out quite a while before, because they couldn't do the work that they put on to do. And that's one thing, I can't understand those things can happen, why they permit them to happen. That's what I say, I don't think they had enough people to be guards, or maybe they don't want to be guards, I don't know.
Did they ever talk to you about sabotage? To watch out for it happening?
No, I don't believe any of them ever did, or the head ones ever did. We might have talked among ourselves in the booth or something like that, you know, that we wonder about if anybody could sabotage, like the Japanese could sabotage the building and things, you know.
What about people that worked inside the building? If they could do things to slow up the progress or that kind
yes,
of thing?
Yes, I think they could. There was one thing that I was an inspector right next to the production department where they put out so many things apart. And he was a... Soviet, what you call him?
Russian.
Russian. He was a Russian guy. He wasn't a United States citizen. He was the head of that department, and I objected to that. Every time he went by me, I said, the next war we're going to have will be with Russia. Oh, one woman got so mad at me for saying that. I said, every time he walked past my booth, I said, we're going to have war with Russia the next time. Oh, you don't know what you're talking about, Bowman. You're just nuts, or you're just crazy to talk like that. I said, all right, you watch and see. I said, if we don't watch out these Russians, I said, we're going to be taken in by them. I said, why can't they have a person born and reared here in the United States be the head of our departments in all these plants? Now, that's one thing that don't look right to me. I don't know how they do now, but that was true, because they said this Russian, you couldn't even talk English. So I can't understand those things. And I don't understand it today, why we're having so many of these Cubans and all those coming over. Why they don't do something about it? It seems like you can't do anything about them. They come over here fast, we all get on. I just don't get it. They're ruining our country, is what they're doing. They don't want to listen to us. They can't make us, can't make them go obey our laws. Look, these Irans, what are they doing? I feel sorry now for the ones that wants to be honest and wants to get an education over here. Now, they're going to stand the brunt of all these others that causes the trouble. And it's wrong. Listen, why are they letting these Cubans come in? They can't even make Glasgow will take the Cubans back. I don't get it myself. I don't understand it. Are we so dumb that we have to put up with it? We can't do much about it. So there you are. I don't know what they're doing to these plants now anymore or how they are. Well, that's about the main thing I know about that.
Were there other services? At the plant, you said there was a bank and that there was a dispensary. Were there other things? Was there recreation or clubs or childcare or any of those kinds of things?
I don't recall of anything. I never belonged to anything like that if they did, but I know they didn't have the bank where you could get your check tagged. And they had the dispensary if anybody got hurt. So they have to take them to the dispensary, you know, if anybody got hurt, you know, that's law, I guess, or whatever you call it. They have to protect themselves on that. But I don't recall, I can't recall whether they ever had anything going at all.
Were you ever aware of counselors, people that you could go to talk over problems about work or personal problems?
No, because I never had any. If I had any, I'd talk to my supervisor. Now, I guess they'd be our counselor, because I'd talk to the supervisor, the only one I ever talked to, or to some of the like this one woman now. She was a kind of a friend of mine that belonged to the union. She gave me a lot of points on things, you know. But, as far as counsel coming to talk to us, you know, the only thing was whenever any inspectors were supposed to come from Washington, D.C. or somewhere, they'd notify us, oh, we had to do this, we had to clean up, we had to do that and the other, and that's all. But that was our supervisors, all of us, to do that, you know. But that's all the counseling I ever got. So that never bothered me, because if I worked, I worked. If I didn't, I didn't. So all that man was so mad, and I just stood there. Oh, he could kill me for it. Someone says, well, Bowman, no wonder you're treated like you were. He says, the way you do. I said, well, I can't see why that they want to pull stuff like that. Why they aren't honest. That's what I want to be, why they aren't honest. But that tickled me when I saw those people watching us over here, that all the rest of them were standing around and they was looking like beavers when those guys walked by, but they had to clear down around, you know, through the plant. But they was watching over there, and I was working, and I just happened to look up and see them, and oh, I was so thrilled over that. And the others standing there talking to each other and not doing anything. Well,
did you know
during
any other women supervisors?
No, I didn't know any. No, not only the ones I worked under. I never paid much attention to the other inspectors. Oh, you mean the inspectors?
Inspectors, other people that had your same job. Were there any other women?
Well, we had a few. Every place I went, we had just a few that worked the same groups that I did. But outside of that, I never paid much attention to what the others, you know, did. I never paid any attention to that. I'd hear something concerning the filing. They'd say, well, what did she apply for? And some says, oh, she applied for filing, so she had to use a file. Well, I learned those things through somebody else telling me those things, you know, because I wouldn't know what to apply for. And I, like I told my daughter, well, Nina, my sister might have told us some things, too. Now, she could have told us, because before I came out, I asked her about different things. Now, maybe that's one thing. But in my application, I didn't put down anything to apply, certain things. I just wanted to know what was available or what I could do, what would be all right for me to do, and showed them my credentials, and that's all. I didn't have any trouble at all that way. I don't know about Eileen, whether she did or not, what she told me.
Did you and Eileen talk very much about work when you were at home?
No.
Did she live at home?
Oh, yeah. She lived at home. But when I got hurt, I think it was about 9 months that she worked there. She says, Mom, she says, I'm going to be a nurse. She wanted to be a nurse before we came out here, and the younger boy wanted to be a doctor. I says, okay. But at that time, the government would train them to be a nurse. I said, now, you think you want to be a nurse? I said, now, I understand, because we checked on that. Now, I understand now that if you take this training and you ever stop before you finish up the training, we have to reimburse the government for every penny. And I said, now, you cannot give it up if you start it. But I said, I'll back you on as much as I can. So she quit as soon as she could get away from there and went right up to the L.A. hospital and started in to be a nurse. And she graduated from the nurse's corps, but I was so afraid she'd get married, because one guy wanted to marry her beforehand. Well, I wasn't too thrilled over it, but I knew I didn't dare to tell her she couldn't marry him, because if you go against him, you can't say much. I told Pop, I said, you got this from her. I said, all he wants her for is, he wasn't well, and he wants to have a nurse, a wife of a nurse. And I said, I don't vote for that, but I said, he may be all right guy, but I said, he won't be able to work or anything. She'll have to do all the work. And I said, I can't see it. And I said, another thing, Pop, I said, they can't get married and then quit the job, quit the train. And so we told the boy, I said, you'd have to work and pay back the government if she gets married. And I told my husband, I said, you make that plain to this boy. I said, I don't dare to open my mouth, because the more I'd say, the more desire, the more determined, you know. Well, he talked her out of it. So they didn't get married then. Then when she started going with her husband, she finally married. Well, she only went with him just a few times, so she quit him, because he said he never went with a girl in his life that knew how to cook. Well, I told him, I said, you get in the kitchen and cook anything you want to cook. And he said that was wonderful if she knew how to cook, and because he said he hadn't ever gone out with a girl. Well, then they finally went back together, and I talked to him, though. I said, well, now, Eileen can't get married until she gets through her training, because I said, We sign a paper. We have to reimburse the government for all our training, for 3 years training. And I said, we cannot afford it. And I said, I told her, warned her that. So they didn't get married until after she graduated. So I said, well, it's up to you. I said, I don't tell you whom you're going to marry, but I said, when you get married, it's you and him. And I said, I want you to work together and make a go of it, but I don't want you to split up. And then I said, maybe have a family. But I said, first, I wanted you to get your training just in case if anything would happen to him, that you'd have to take care of the children that you'd have and support them. Because at that time, a lot of women had to. And I said, I wanted you to have some kind of a career that you can fall back to. And I said, always keep up your license down through the years, regardless whether you work or not. Well, she's kept me down too. Now, last year, she graduated from what they call managing the nurse's training. There was quite a few of them graduating at the same time. But then when she went to work in the hospital, it was so hard, and they expected so much out of the ones that were willing to work, she said, Mom, she said she just couldn't take it. So she quit working then. And so she's not working, but she still has her credentials, or whatever you call it, and has her license. So that way that she can always go back to training. And then her daughter is a nurse, starting to be a nurse too, or the one daughter is. But that was one thing that when I got hurt, she said, Mom, she said, I'm not going to work at that factory any longer. She said, here, you got hurt. She said, you may be crippled the rest of your life. And she quit the first week after I got hurt, or that same week whenever she could sign out. But she told them that she planned on being a nurse, so they let her out. So that's what happened then.
You talked about the union and that you had never wanted to join the union and that. And I'm wondering if what kinds of activities were going on around the union, that how you were aware of it.
Well, I don't know too much about what went on, but I do know that some people had to sign up in order to keep their jobs. They had to sign up to the union. You pay into the union so much, you know. But as far as what they do, now my other son belongs to the union. He's a typesetter and an electrician and a plumber, and he works for the city. Well, he joined the union. Well, another thing, a union, when they strike, you got to go out and maybe kill people. Or that is, when they're striking, they do kill some people, you know. They harm people. And I can't see that. That was one thing that I looked at in strikes before, because some people would get killed. Well, I may be funny that way, but I just can't see it. And I thought to myself, well, why should I join? Because then you're supposed to go out and strike with the rest of them. If they tell you to, well, you're supposed to. Well, this electrician group had a strike just recently, so I got over it. Well, I was scared maybe my elder son would have to go out and help strike with the rest of them. But I guess they didn't harm anybody this time. But you never know, because when somebody's going to come to go to work, they'll fight you, you know, and they don't want you in. And then, what?
I was going to ask you if they talked to you at the plant about the union, if people would talk to you about it.
Not very many. Now, this one woman is a friend of mine. She would say, Bowman, she said, don't you want to join? I said, no, I don't want to join. Because back home, they used to call them scabs. I worked at the garment factory before I taught school. I went there and worked 6 weeks. Well, they called them scabs. If anybody come to go to work, by the others would keep them out, and they'd hurt them. They'd make them stay out. That is, they'd try to prevent them staying out. They had to run into them or harm them in any way they could harm them. Well, I saw that happen, and I never liked that. That's one thing where I learned from observation that they were called scabs. Well, that's what they called back then. I imagine it'd be the same out here. So that's where I got my knowledge about in union. And they said they had to pay so much out of their paychecks and this and that and the other. And I said, well, I just won't join them. But they said if I'd stayed long enough with the factory, then I'd have to. Well, when I went to work there at the factory, I hadn't got my school yet. I had my license, but I hadn't got my school yet, and I was supposed to teach out in the country, a one-room school. Well, anyway, I went to work at the factory, and at that time, you're supposed to start from the bottom and go up, you know. Well, I work on corsets, you know, and at the head of the top, where you put these pieces together, you sew them together. Well, they put me on that machine right away. And other people would come in, they make mistakes, and they had a whole bunch of bundles of mistakes, and I'd have to take them apart, you know, and do them over again. Well, I did what I was supposed to do. So then when the 6 weeks was up, I told them I was quitting. Oh, they were so mad. They said they never put me up on the seamstress if they'd known I was going to do that. They put me at the high park, you know. Well, I didn't want all that other. I said, you put some of these other people up there, and I said, look at all that stuff that I had to tear out and redo over. I said, I'd better just go ahead and sew up those sides, because I'd done all right. But before I left, I think the very day, I ran the needle through my finger. You can almost see the scar. Yeah, I ran through my finger. Now, that I was talking to somebody, and I was a sewing, you know, and I should never have been taking my eyes off the needle, but I ran the needle through there. So I